You're about to enjoy TryHards, courtesy of MTGCast.com. If you enjoy TryHards or anything else supplied by MTGCast, please make a donation. Whether it's recurring or one time, you can help offset the very real overhead of bringing you the best podcasts in magic every week. MTGCast at MTGCast.com.
I love the challenge, though.
Why make a zero EV play?
It's not conducive to the game.
Just smacks too much of desperation for me.
Oh, you two are going to sit there and take it.
Why did they pick that?
You were sending everything short of unasked for nudes.
The game lives in those halls where people gather and do this. It lives at the kitchen tables. It lives at the local shop.
Oh, you brave soul. It's another episode of TryHards, the post-Pro Tour edition. So, who are the rivals from Ixalan? We'll work it all out, as well as figure out who had the clothing of the weekend, the self-grown clothing of the weekend, and, of course, who left the biggest impression on us with their play at the tables. I'm Sean Seacrease, he's Matt Hurley, and he's Brian Tibbetts. Whenever we get together, we are trouble, or the TryHards. And we hope that you enjoy this episode with us here this evening. We always start it with, what are you drinking? Matt, you said you've got something besides water, so you've earned the leadoff spot.
So we went shopping at Aldi's yesterday, and I got some of the delicious IPA from there in the 24-ounce cans. A classic go-to. It's good stuff.
I saw this beer on the shelf when I was out before the weekend. If you changed one letter from Brian's deck, from Eternal Weekend, from an H to an N, you would have what I have now from Boulevard, the oak-aged Scotch Ale Snow and Tell. I was laughing too hard when I saw that on the shelf. I thought, not only is it good, and I've gotten it in past years, but it got rather crisp across the Midwest today. And I thought, a good stout like this is going to be exactly what I need for the show tonight. So the Snow and Tell in my glass. Brian, what do you have this evening?
Something that is two of my loves, all in one beautiful bottle. I have something from Dark Horse Brewing Company out of Marshall, Michigan, which is an amazing brewery. They brew one of my favorite IPAs, which is the Crooked Tree. If you haven't tried that, please do so. This is the Thirsty Trout Porter. And as many know, I am an avid fly fisherman when I get the time to do that among my other hobbies. Saw that and said, yes, as you alluded to, Sean, the weather has taken a turn for the nippy, and so I needed something darker in my glass than I've had the last few weeks. So the Thirsty Trout Porter, very, very malty, very smooth, a little bit of coffee going on. So, yeah, I'm making my way through a six-pack of this very quickly this evening.
Brian, are you a better trout fisherman or a better magic player?
Oh, God, I knew that question was going to come up. Well, let's just say this. I haven't fished in a while, so I'm going to put my magic skills up at the top. More so than that, but fishing to me is like riding a bike. So next time I get to wet the line, I'll report back. But for right now, let's just say I'm no good at either.
Uh-oh. Brian, I gotta say, I did not know that you were a trout fisherman.
Oh,
that
really?
Is something I did not. That's actually one of the things that I've mentioned to Lauren that we need to do more often. I brought my fly pole and all that crap down here, and I'd hope to find some streams down in Kentucky somewhere at some point.
Oh, yeah. No, you should definitely check that out, because anytime you're in a new spot, definitely one of the first things to do is kind of check out the outdoors. So, no, I think there'd be some good spots down there. But, no, that would be a fun thing to do. A magic fly fishing weekend sounds like a ball.
What would Sean do?
He would just cook for us.
Okay, and that is something that we've done in the past. Brian and another friend of ours from high school, Tim, used to take me trout fishing with them, not because I was any good at actually trout fishing, but because I enjoyed the whiskey with them, and then I could grill it as well. So everybody came out with the winner. I can still supply those aspects, and I can sit in the stream and throw my shoulder out. I'd probably catch just as many as you two would, apparently, at this point. So we'd all go hungry, and then I'd get something out of the cooler. It seems that the fish can rest at ease because we won't be threatening them too badly here on this episode of TryHards. What we can threaten, though, are our opponents with some interesting gameplay. Guys, what magic did you play this week? Matt, what did you get up to with the cardboard?
Not a single thing. It was the girl's birthday weekend, It started off with a nice dinner Friday night. Met some friends, and then one of our friends said, well, you know what? We need to go out for some beers. Turned into a lot of beers. And then so that turned into a get almost zero accomplished on Saturday, which meant no magic. And then Sunday was, well, we got to clean the house and everything. So I didn't even get to play online. That's going to change this weekend. She's actually working both days this weekend with a holiday coming up. She's going to be out most. I'm going to try to catch the Legacy Challenge this Sunday, I hope.
Brian, what Magic did you play this weekend?
I played Watching Magic on Twitch. Did not get to sling any cardboard. Actually, goldfished out quite a few decks that I have while I was watching Magic, so I felt like I was playing a little bit. But yeah, didn't sling any cardboard with an actual opponent this week. Sean, I hope you were able to actually play. Otherwise, we're going to be over.
We are taking the collar this week here on Tryhards. I know I had all the plans in the world to go play. Rachel and I did a little testing early in the week last week, and then I had a job opportunity come up. I saw something through, and then another thing came up, and then I had the just stomach-churning experience of saying I would do something, then declining it 36 hours before it started because I got something else better in my eyes that I wanted to do. So I was busy sort of doing research for one thing and then resigning it and then burning that research so that I could start research on another project that I had just taken on. So it was a lot of churning and work, and we had one person in the hospital, one funeral to go to. And as we speak, the daughter-in-law is being induced to have her second. So it's been a hectic week around the house this weekend. Remember, full-time adults, part-time Magic players.
Amen.
That's what we are here on Tryhards. So we didn't get to play any Magic amongst us this week, but we did get to brag over our Pro Tour picks. Too long in the cold did I rest. Now, finally, the warmth of victory is mine. I wanted to go with the headline first before we got into this. Our Pro Tour pick'em. Oh, you two are going to sit there and take it because, Brian, you've won four times, and Matt, you've won two times, and I've had to introduce you every time. So let's get to it. The Pro Tour pick'em. Brian had Kenta Hirani. He sort of expanded his wings to bring in somebody who would, I'm not going to say you're off the radar if you're the Japanese national player, but he didn't have a great Pro Tour at 406th. Corey Burkhart, 311th. Reed Duke was actually the top finishing pick amongst the tryhards at 28th, but that lined Brian up all told for last place with 745 points. Matt had LSV at 37th, Sam Black at 139th, and Jerry T, 431st. And
talk then, about an anchor right there, Jerry T.
Yeah, that
was...
Hey, we've all had somebody who we thought was going to do exceptionally well and then not do well. And don't get too far out of line, Brian. He only finished 25 spots behind Kenta Hirani. So you...
Oh, no. I get it. I totally get it. But Jerry T, former Pro Tour champion, I was expecting a little bit more.
Oh, yeah. So reigning Pro Tour champion coming into this. And my picks were looking dreadful sort of after day one. But Huey Jensen and Corey Baumeister both rallied. Jensen finished 39th, Baumeister 95th, and John Finkel 314th. If you scratch the three from that and finish 14th, that's what I kind of had in mind for him and when I picked this team, but it was still good enough. 448 points gives me my first Tryhards Pro Tour Pick'em title, and it felt
welcome
good.
To the club,
finally,
Sean.
Thank you, Sean.
Thank you.
We've been waiting all this time.
Thank you. I feel like you guys are in the Saturday Night Live like five timers club, and I just got my first one, so I've still got some work to do before I can hang out with you guys.
I admit, we cannot claim our hot picks. I was thinking over the weekend, our lukewarm at the best picks, because, man, this was just bumping uglies against the line in Vegas. This was terrible on our part, guys.
I feel like I won a sprint of one-legged sprinters in order to get this title.
Yeah, exactly.
That's pretty accurate.
Basically accurate. The way it went down. So I'd like to say thanks to Huey Jensen, Corey Baumeister, and John Finkel for dragging me across the finish line for the victory this weekend. All right, I guess we can talk about the Pro Tour as well. We'll be picking again, of course, before Rivals of Ixalan. What stood out to me from this Pro Tour over the weekend, guys, not only was it an American Pro Tour, and you saw success coming from all kinds of different angles, nothing, though, in my mind, will be able to outdo Maria Bartholdi's dinosaur shirt on day one. You want to talk about being on point for the weekend? I thought that was a great way to get the weekend started. The weekend ended, of course, with Seth Manfield on Black Blue Green Energy pulling out a tense Game 5 against Pascal Maynard on God Pharaoh's Gift. We saw Sigrist versus Eilenfeldt in the quarterfinals. Four color energy for Sigrist and vehicles for Eilenfeldt. The ending of this game was exceptionally weird. Sigrist apparently forgot that his Longtusk cub didn't have summoning sickness and could have attacked. Eilenfeldt went from disadvantaged in the game to supremely advantaged. He had a number of ways to bring this home. Guillaume Matignon, a name from seemingly the primordial mists of Magic history, the world champ like 6 years ago, right? We have such a short memory span. He was there on Jeskai Approach. Guys, there just seemed to be so much that was fun about this Pro Tour. And Matt, did you have the most fun watching your sort of janky God Pharaoh's Gift deck get a moment in the sun?
I got two texts about that. I got to say, I still am not a believer in, and I'm going to say the name wrong. I always call it refurbished. Is that the right one?
Yeah.
I think that is an awful card. It's a blowout when you get hit with a negate off of a refurbish. It also requires you to play for the God Pharaoh's Gift. I just think that you're better off just playing a value deck without refurbishing it and then just running two of the God Pharaoh's Gift. It really helped him that there wasn't a lot of abrades in the top eights. It definitely did warm my cold black heart, you know, when I see the God Pharaoh's Gift, just because that card, I'm just like, this is awesome. And I really wish I would have seen this when Insolent Neonate was still in the format, that it would have seen the popularity it currently has right now.
Brian, what'd you take away from this Pro Tour weekend? Was it a champion of yesteryear, like Matignon coming back with his Jeskai Approach deck? Was it something that was made as a sartorial choice? Was it a deck that stood out to you? What from Pro Tour Ixalan are you taking away?
Two things really kind of held my attention all weekend that I thought were fantastic storylines. The first one is first-time Pro Tour participant Sam Eilenfeldt making the top eight, which I thought was just fantastic. So kind of the, you know, the rookie story, makes the top eight. He's the eighth seed in the Pro Tour going up against the first seed, Mike Sigrist, and then actually beats Sigrist. He actually makes it all the way to the semis, which I thought was a fantastic, fantastic storyline. Kid from Minnesota, kind of the aw shucks thing. Thing I liked about watching him play was not only was he a technically very savvy player, his kind of banter, even though the microphones were muted to a point where you couldn't catch everything that they were saying, I thought the coverage team did a pretty good job of trying to listen in when he was actually trying to converse with his opponent, because he had some witty, as I said, aw shucks, upper Midwesterner things going on. At one point, I remember him saying, oh, that's not the card I wanted to see, you know, kind of keeping it kind of light and fun. So I thought that was a great storyline. The second story that I thought was fantastic was when I can find a deck called Mono White Vampires that finished 22nd. Which is really, really high in this field of energy decks and Ramunap red decks and the GPG decks. I think that was really, really fun to see something that does not cost a lot of money and is still very, very competitive. It reminds me of a lot of the tribal decks that we've seen before that kind of throw together all the best cards and just have a synergy. Kudos to Wilson Hunter for putting something like that together and taking it far at Pro Tour Ixalan.
Looking at that White Vampires deck, where you talked about synergy, has that made enough of an impact with the vampires that we have from Ixalan that it's no longer Kaladesh's world? Because energy was everywhere. You have these overwhelmingly powerful cards from Kaladesh that seem to be casting their shadow over the entire format. Did Ixalan make a big impact in your mind, whether it be that Mono White Vampires deck or other contributions that it's made to the format, or are we still living in Kaladesh's reality?
As much as I like this deck, I still think we're living in Kaladesh's reality, because energy, it's in the format for what, guys, for at least another year? Am I right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, that's a long time. And Sean, you've said this before on the cast. Energy is probably a very broken mechanic when you reflect upon it. how broken it becomes going forward, I think remains to be seen. And Wizards, I know the last thing they want to do is ban something else, but I don't know. Are there any, if Energy keeps putting up the numbers like this, no matter what sets are released and what new cards come out, if it still becomes just kind of an Energy focused top eight at Pro Tours, at Grand Prix, at Worlds and things like this, is there another ban in Standard on the horizon? And if so, what would those cards be, guys? And can Wizards survive yet another ban to the Standard metagame at this point?
I think there's an easy ban if you want to do it. And it's a ban that won't have many financial repercussions, but it's a ban that will have deck building repercussions. And that's a tune with Aether. To me, that's one that you can take and you can make the format much different without having a huge financial impact. Matt, what did you see this weekend? Are we still in Kaladesh's world? Did Ixalan make a big impact? And how did that kind of change your perception of Standard, if it did?
Ixalan did make a big impact. It's much bigger than I thought it would. We were discussing this a little bit before the show, and I think a lot of the rares are what's surprising me. There's not a lot of Ixalan mythics out there. I mean, you've got your Vraska, you've got stuff like that, but there's not a crap ton of mythics. It's a lot of rares here and there that are kind of changing things up quite a bit. I got to say, I don't think they need to ban it, but I agree with you, Sean. I think Attune with Aether, if they wouldn't have had all those bannings before, just needs to go. It's not conducive to the game. It's not conducive to varied format, and I think the tribal decks have to get a lot more tools to them before they can have a chance to really overtake the energy monster that's currently in the format. As of right now, I mean, you had a decent diversity of decks, even though there was 40% of the decks, I think it was 44% maybe, were energy total. That needs to be looked at, and they need to say, okay, how can we fix this?
Now, the Pro Tour is always a combo format. You have draft and you have standard. And we'll talk about draft here in a second. But Matt, this weekend, GP Atlanta is standard. If you were playing in that event, what would you play now that you've seen Pro Tour Ixalan unfold?
On a personal level, me, I would probably play one of the God Pharaoh Gifts decks. I think the four color energy or one of the energy variants is just your standard go-to.
I think that the energy decks, what they do is they don't require absolute perfect play. There's so many resources with, you know, people having 7, 8, 9 energy at their disposal at a lot of different points in the game. You can come at it with a Whirler Virtuoso and a Long Tusk Cub and a Bristling Hydra on the battlefield, let alone some Harness Lightnings and things. Your opponent has to be aware of so many things that a vast number of players can come to that deck and have options to interact, whereas you're at the other side of the table, not so much ready to interact with all of those options that the energy opponent has. It seems like a good deck to pick up. The Sultai energy I thought that Manfield played was phenomenal. I thought that was a great choice for this, but the four color energy still seems to be the deck of choice right now.
That's where Standard seems to sit at this moment. Pro Tours also encapsulate 6 rounds of draft play, which is why this stat was even more amazing to me. Yamwing Chung, guy, started 10-0. That means he 3-0'd his first draft, won 5 rounds of Standard play, and then started his second draft at 2-0 to get to 10-0. It only took his first loss in the last round of draft play on day 2. As amazing as that record is, Brian, what do you think about draft at this point? We have 3 clear-cut decks, Black-White Vampires, Red-Green Dinosaurs, and Pirate Cutlass whatever. Usually Grixis Pirates if you can get right. a couple of Pirate Cutlasses along the way. What do you think about how this one is playing out, and does it seem like there's any more innovation to be had?
You know, right now there might not be that much innovation because those decks are so strong, those archetypes are so strong for drafting, but hey, that's fine. If you know what's happening going in and you sit down and pack one, pick one, you've got one of those archetypes staring you in the face, then go for it. And, you know, as long as you don't get hate drafted out, as long as your opponents are on something else, which a lot of people most likely would be, depending on what they pull. I think it's a fun format. I think the draft The way people pick their drafts is absolutely mind-bogglingly skilled. I'm still in awe of people who can do that much, like Yam did in the draft. Go that many undefeated rounds. It's just incredible to me because I just can't do that. I just have never found that to be the case. After the fact, I get to reflect on what I draft. Oh, yeah, maybe I should have picked that. Oh, yeah, now I see that. Now I see that. I love the challenge, though.
Matt, what about you? Did you enjoy the draft and the draft coverage? Or is this something that is just part of what we have to do for the weekend?
No, I enjoyed it. I always love when they go through, they walk through the drafts with the players. You know, they explain every pick because there's a lot of times I go through and I'm like, why did they pick that? You get a much different experience. And I've mentioned this in the past, drafting at a higher skill level than you do drafting at, you know, like an FNM, because somebody sees a, let's use hostage taker. Somebody's in red, green dinosaurs, pack three, they open up a hostage shaker. They're going to take that because it's worth like, you know, $15 or whatever it is. If you go to a pro level event, that doesn't happen like that unless, you know, it's Goyfgate. I think that them walking through and explaining everything provides so much. And I got to see a few of those where they walk through and they explained it. And then some of the draft cams too. It just kind of opens your mind up and you say, oh, yeah, I see that. I see why they made this decision. I see why, you know, everything is happening like it is. And I think if you're not taking something away from the draft at Pro Tours, you're not paying enough attention to it.
Pro Tour Ixalan. It was interesting through and through, and not the least bit was because Magic introduced its new Hall of Fame class, a two-man class this time, Josh Utter-Layton and Martin Yuza. Congratulations to both of them for being inducted into the Magic Hall of Fame. Before we wrap up the Pro Tour coverage, Matt, I know you were hot on one controversial topic from the weekend. You were sending links. You were sending everything short of unasked for nudes to try and grab our attention on this topic over the weekend. What had you so worked up?
So there was a disqualification in round 15. Now, mind you, this was a 16-round tournament, and I will probably butcher his name, but competitor Yao Ziel was disqualified for using an improper method to determine the outcome of a match. He was playing LSV. And you can read about it on the mothership or on the Pro Tour coverage. They recognized that there was much more value to one of them winning and the other losing versus both of them getting draws. They were discussing at the end of time to say, okay, hey, you know, who is going to win this? Let's see if we can figure out something else besides a draw. They both laid out their hands, were discussing their plays before they signed the match slip. And apparently Yao Ziel said, well, let me look at the top couple and I'll tell you, if it's any of these two cards, I would have won. If it's any of these, not these two cards, then I would have lost. So he reveals the top two and gets a DQ in round 15. Now, mind you, LSV for me finished, what was it, Sean, like 60th?
37th.
So LSV finished 37th. Yao Ziel was probably in the running for a top 64 or a pro tour, and he gets disqualified for this. Yes, he did explicitly break the rules because you can't use outside information, which the only information you could use is what's on the table in your hand to determine, you know, who's going to win the match. But is there a certain amount of player responsibility there to understand the rules of the tournament? Yes. Was there maybe, I don't know, I don't want to say leniency because it's in the round 15 of a pro tour as much as I want to say, you know, somebody could have said, hey guys, here's what you can use. Let's coach you on this, because they had to have a table judge there at that point, I'm sure. It's a super feel bad to see a player in round 15 that's probably in the top at this point, in the top 50 players, to get disqualified at that point and then just lose everything. Because if you get disqualified, it's not just that's not just a match loss. That's you're out of the tournament and you get pro points. You get zero money. You get zero everything.
Hurley, I'm not disagreeing with you. That is a feel bad for sure. But I think down to the even most novice player, you know, you can look at your board state, you can look at the cards in your hand and even reveal those to your opponent. They can do the same to you and you can talk it over. That's completely within the bounds. And, you know, one of you can offer a concession, et cetera, et cetera. But to start flipping over cards from the top of your library, I was a little gobsmacked. I'm like, seriously? I mean, what you're doing is basically saying, well, if we were going to go into the future, here's what would have played out. Well, you know what? Guess what? You didn't make it there. You're not there. It wasn't going to happen. So to me, that was just kind of a futile exercise to have anyway. And for them not to know that that was against the rules, I think, was just a little mind-boggling to me. Yeah, it was definitely a feel bad. I'll definitely say that, but it was the right call. I think it was definitely
the right call. It was definitely the right call. This goes kind of not necessarily the bribery, but where you have to word your choices very, very clearly. The only reason this is illegal is to stop me from cutting my deck and saying, okay, the person with the highest mana cost, they win the game. I feel like this is another one of those that it's like, okay, I don't have a good solution here, guys, but there's got to be a solution to make everything 100% crystal clear for everybody to say this is against the rules.
I think that it already is 100% crystal clear. You can't do that. You have to know that at the Pro Tour. You have to understand your surroundings. Sunday night, I'm on the couch just staring zombie-like at the Sunday night football game, which was the Raiders and somebody. I don't know. Fantasy football will make you watch weird games.
It was the Dolphins.
Raiders and Dolphins. Thank you. And at one point during the game, I'm thinking about what you sent in that text about how you were upset and we need a different rule. There was a downtime between downs, and one of the Raiders offensive linemen jumped up after the play and sort of faux headbutted one of the Dolphins linemen. And then after that, they were like hugging each other. So you're like, wait a minute, what's going on? Well, the announcers explained that they were like college roommates and played on the same football team, but the officials don't know that. Helmet to helmet contact is a foul. They threw the flag. The guy got a 15-yard personal foul penalty, which took the first down away from the Raiders. They would still go on to win the game. This, to me, was almost a perfect metaphor for what you're talking about. What you're doing is illegal. You have to be aware of where you're doing it. It doesn't matter if you get caught or not. It's a dumb play. You know what pros, Magic pros, love to talk about? EV. What's the EV of turning those cards over and saying, if I had this, I would have won? Zero. Why make a zero EV play? To me, this was just stupidity run amok. Right. At the highest level of Magic, I think the rule, Matt, is already crystal clear, and the judges had no choice. And if you say, well, the rule needs to be adjusted, no, it doesn't. You can't use outside influence, and flipping cards off of your deck is clearly outside influence.
My only big concern here, though, is that I hope it wasn't kind of like a translation error. I wasn't there, so I can't say anything, but, you know, it wasn't a confusion. But, yeah, I agree with you guys. If you're at that level, you should know it. But this is one of those plays I could easily see somebody at F&M, which I don't know if this would actually be a DQ at F&M. I think it would be a GRV. I have to wonder, hey, is this a play that somebody at F&M would make? And then you have to explain to them why it's not a good play.
I think it would just be a ration of shaming at F&M. People would say, shame. Don't do that. Feel shame. Yeah.
Well, and I can't imagine LSV trying to bait somebody into doing that either. I wonder
just,
what his
just
reaction
Paul Cheon. He tried to bait Cheon into doing it, but nobody else.
I wonder what was going through LSV's head if the guy started flipping over cards and he's just like, oh my God.
Yeah, I mean, I have to wonder.
Can't stand. Yeah. Or if it was, hey, yeah, I got it. Woohoo. You know, just, you know, talked him into this. No, I can't imagine that happening. So it is unfortunate. But if you can't figure out who's going to win the match by revealing your hands and looking at the board state, I don't think there's any game out there, any game, that I would want to then try to play it into the future to say, well, if I flip this over and if I flip this over, let alone a modern deck or a legacy deck where, you know, fetch lands are involved and all this stuff. So there's randomization of decks. I mean, obviously that wasn't into play. It's futile. I find it a very, very strange thing to try to convince your opponent by such means that you are going to win. Somebody there, it just smacks too much of desperation for me. And so I hate to say that, probably got what he deserved. If there's another view out there that I'm completely missing, by all means, hit us up on Twitter or the Patreon page or whatever. I would love to get into that. I just found this to be kind of a no-brainer. Yep, broke the rules. Too bad it happened in round 15, and I hope you never do that again.
TheTryHards3@gmail.com if you want to disagree with Brian. That was what Matt was taking away from it. Brian, was there something you took away from this weekend?
The best part of the weekend, guys, I don't think anybody can argue with me on this point, I'm just right about this, was Riley Knight's porn stash.
Glorious. Glorious.
Was glorious. And For him to rock that all weekend without the littlest bit of self-reference, and he was on point all weekend, I thought, with his coverage, with his criticisms, with his one-liners. He was all over it. And so he was able to, like, earn that porn stash that he rocked. Riley Knight, hats off to you. If you ever want to be on the Tryhards, by all means, we've got an episode for you.
Yes, as I said to the girl, cookies were dusted, wombs were broomed, and rides were given. That mustache was in full effect all weekend long. Pro Tour Ixalan. Hopefully the next major Premier Series event that we're going to get, the World Cup, is going to live up to it. I think we'll do just fine. Guys, we have a couple of other issues to get to before we get in the elevator for this weekend. Matt, we learned that From the Vault Transformed was fully announced. November 24th is going to be the release date, and it features 15, according to Wizards, quote-unquote, iconic transform cards. Is this something that we need to pay attention to based on value? Is this something that is just going to be iconic? Where do we fall on From the Vault Transform?
Transform before, you're like, it's Jace Brin's Prodigy and what else? But there's some sweet art in here. Yeah, all the Origins ones. It's got Bloodline Keeper, which shot up because of vampires. Sweet art on Garruk Relentless. I mean, sweet art on Delver and Huntmaster. And then the Bruna and Gisela are pretty sweet as well, although I wish they would have put new art on there. This is one of those things that MSRP is $35. If your local game store is selling it and you need any of these cards, I'd say just pick it up just on a financial thing because it's pretty legit looking.
From the Vault Transform. You transform your money into cards, or maybe transform your money into more money in the future if you just hold on to it. We'll see how that goes. One thing that we all love to transform is our free time into great times with friends. And on that front, that's why a lot of us play Magic. But Magic's latest foray into board games, Matt, is also coming. Magic has announced all of the relevant details for its Explorers of Ixalan board game release. Is this something that is going to be confined to the shelves of let's have some friends over and play, or is the deck list actually going to draw the attention of competitive Magic players simply for the cards that are being included in this release?
There's a lot of cards in here. There's a lot of value. This one's another one. MSRP $65. I have no idea how this is going to look. It's got like the octagon, build your own board, similar to like Settlers of Catan. And there's a lot of sweet cards in here. I mean, you've got Day of Judgments in here. You've got Mass Mutinies, I believe, is the one of them that's in here. And you've got like Registrar Alphas, Adaptive Automatons. I mean, just a lot of like weird cards that are just expensive just for they're just not around. There's just not a lot of them running around. And then there's some new art in here as well. You know, this is one of those things that if I have an extra, I wouldn't say extra $65 as much as I have an extra $65 in store credit or something like that. Yeah, I'll pick this up and I'll try it and I'll see what kind of reviews it's getting. I hope this isn't like I don't remember what the other board game was, but they canceled it after like two expansions. And I played it a couple times and it's relatively fun. I hope that if they do this, they're going to stick with it. You know, there's going to be a reason to stick everything together and that's fun enough to play because it looks interesting. I hope that they expand it out a little bit, you know, the whole game of Magic over like board games and things like this.
Matt, I haven't seen the release for Explorers of Ixalan, but my question is, and correct me if I'm wrong here, because they may be doing this and I just don't know because I haven't seen the release. Wizards of the Coast owns both Magic and Dungeons & Dragons, two of the premier game systems that are available today. Is there a chance they could combine the two into a board game? Is there, I would think there would be some synergy there, even if you don't label it as one product or another. You could use those engines that you already have ownership of.
Absolutely. I think it's, let me see who that makes it, but they've had Dungeons & Dragons board games out that run in mm-hmm. that. The MSRP is like 60 to 90. I don't know who actually licenses it out for them or if they own it and they do all of it themselves. But they've been extremely popular, gotten fairly good reviews. Like, you've got, like, what's this one called? You know, Wrath of Astradalon. I'm not sure how to say that. And they come with, like, figures. And I've played the Castle Ravenloft one, and the Castle Ravenloft one was a lot of fun. So this is another one of those marketing things. I don't think it's too long. We've already seen the campaign settings for Magic go over to Dungeons & Dragons, and I don't think it's too long before we see a new kind of mashup between Dungeons & Dragons board games and these Magic themes, or, you know, vice versa some type. I mean, we've got a $160 Tomb of Annihilation board game that has gotten just amazing reviews from everybody who has it. I've never played it, but it's a Dungeons & Dragons thing that's put out by WizKids. So I don't know if they license that out or how that works, but they need to do a crossover.
Yeah, it seems like the opportunity is in front of them as we speak to sort of mash up those two titles and do an even bigger crossover. Speaking of crossing over, there has been some talk of compare and contrast rearing its head once again between Magic, our beloved meat space physical cardboard game, and the purely digital realm of League of Legends. League of Legends had their championships along the Pacific Rim over the weekend as well, while we were all engaged in Pro Tour Ixalan. Brian, is this still something that we should be looking at as a compare and contrast, or can we say, look, this is a different game, enjoy it, there is some Venn diagram overlap, but not so much that Magic has to be worried or jealous of League's success because they are two fundamentally different properties. If Magic was going to be jealous of anything in the digital realm, I would think it would have to be more along the Hearthstone line than something like League of Legends.
I see these as two completely different beasts. Does Magic need to be jealous of League of Legends? Those at Wizards of the Coast who are worried about, you know, price per share and stock value, sure. Why aren't we getting in on this? What can we do to make our product cheaper for us, more return, etc.? Of course, I could see the rationale for trying to do that. But this game was born in 1993. This was a cardboard game. This was done around the kitchen table. This was done on carpeted floors in House Springs, Missouri, Sean, where you taught me how to play the game for the first time. This is a different animal, and we are evolving as we go. We can't just jump into this massive e-arena that is League of Legends. They've got that already. So Wizards has made great strides in bringing the digital platforms far along as they can. We know about all the problems with Modo. You know, Arena beta coming out, I think, has been hyped ad nauseum. We'll see if it lives up to it, and hopefully it will be a good product. But no, we should not really worry about this. This game that draws hundreds of competitors on weekends to Pittsburgh, where we were just at Eternal Weekend, 711 for the Legacy alone, that's where the game lives. The game lives in those halls where people gather and do this. It lives at the kitchen tables. It lives at the local shops. It's not something that lives online. That is only a resource. And the game, I don't think, will ever truly give that up. If it does, I think they're going to lose more players than they gain, honestly.
Matt, should Magic worry about becoming the most popular stream in its own house before moving on to take on other brands? And what I'm referencing there is the most popular Magic stream, such as the Pro Tour, drew about low to mid 30,000 watchers during the finals. Every week, every Thursday night, there is a massively popular D&D game featured on Twitch called Critical Role that draws 35,000 plus viewers. That is a Dungeons & Dragons property. Now, they aren't directly employees or patrons for or spokespeople for Wizards of the Coast. I'm not making that assessment at all or that relationship. But they are featuring a Wizards of the Coast product in D&D and regularly drawing mid-30,000 viewers, where Magic struggles to pick up that number at any time except for the finals of a Pro Tour. Should Magic be more concerned about becoming the most powerful Twitch channel in its own house before it goes and tries to take on League?
I absolutely think so. I mean, we've covered this ad nauseum. Magic is boring to watch if you don't know what's going on. I could sit down my girlfriend in front of a Twitch stream with the D&D stuff, and she would semi-understand what's going on. Same way with League of Legends, all this other stuff. But we just need to make sure that it's always there and you're always looking at it so that we can make improvements. And every time we make improvements, you know, maybe we pick up a few more views here and there. But I also think brand awareness is a big thing they need to work on. And I beat this one into the ground too. But brand awareness. So everyone is familiar with Dungeons & Dragons. I mean, I don't care what kind of, you know, if you're a soccer mom, you know what Dungeons & Dragons is. You probably don't know everything there is to know about Magic. Because of that, I think you get a lot of brand awareness issues where people might see it on Twitch, but then they see it on Twitch and they don't necessarily go to it. So I think it's just a awareness thing that you need to work on first. And then you, after you work on your awareness, you need to become, like you said, Sean, become the most popular thing in the house.
It'll be interesting to see where Magic goes from here. Will they issue a mandatory theme shirt requirement for Pro Tours going forward after the success of Maria Bartoldi's dinosaur shirt? I think that could be step one. Step two, step three, profit. I think that's where we're going to at this point. All right, that brings us up to this week's In the Elevator here on TryHards. One guy that we saw over the weekend, I'm going to say guy because I'm probably a sexist a-hole, and I also am not going to check a dinosaur for gender parts, especially not one as mean as Rampaging Ferocidon. He was all over the Pro Tour this weekend, and he finds himself in the elevator this week here on TryHards.
Rampaging Ferocidon's market price right now is about $430. I think if you're trading these, you can still pick them up in the $350 or so range. It's got everything a red deck wants on a creature. Pick up a playset of these now, I would say. I've even seen people brewing a little bit in Modern. This will never be less than like a $250, you know, $2.50 card or $3 card. And if you see a lot of good showings once Ixalan's rotated, not rotated out, but once Ixalan's not being drafted heavily anymore, I mean, this could easily be a $5 or $6 card.
Rampaging Ferocidon, this week's In the Elevator here on TryHards. That brings us up to this week's 3 Minutes to Brew. Brian, I'm hungry. What are we having?
Sorry, Sean. You don't get any food this week. Instead, you have to go on Argel's Blood Fast. Legendary enchantment, one black, one other, for a black and one, pay two life, draw a card. At the beginning of your upkeep, if you have five or less life, you may transform Argel's Bloodfast. Argel's Bloodfast transforms into, thanks wizards for making your cards completely unpronounceable, Temple of Aklazots, legendary land, tap to add a black, or tap to sacrifice a creature, and you gain life equal to the sacrificed creature's toughness. This is a fascinating card, A, because it's a flip card, and you guys all know where my heart lies with the flip cards. But I think with the Sultai Energy deck that we saw Manfield pilot to a first-place finish in Pro Tour Ixalan, we got to see how important the Glintsleeve Siphoners were for him, paying the life to draw the extra card along. That was also an energy resource, but is it worth paying two life, a black and another, to draw a card? Sean, I'm going to start with you. Argel's Bloodfast, where do you see it?
I'd like to thank Wizards for giving me a card that's half Necropotence, half Diamond Valley, because those are both cards that are pretty good, and Necropotence isn't worth anything financially, but I think Diamond Valley is. So go check, kids, and see if you have one of your parents' Diamond Valleys by mistake. You may be able to turn that into like a Chandra Torch of Defiance or a Hostage Taker or something in Standard right now.
Sean, you need to step back off that. You can turn it into about a Underground Sea.
Well, and then you could turn that into two Hostage Takers or maybe one Chandra Torch of Defiance, because Standard card prices are a little bit crazy and we're never sure where they're going. But this is a card that I really like because Necropotence was so good that it was banned. It became its own meme. It got an uncard called Necro Impotence. And this is something that is just amazing whenever you're allowed to pay life to draw cards. Now, like Greed, this one requires mana as well, and Greed wasn't very good, so they cut down on the mana cost a little bit. But I like this in control decks. I like this in anything that's playing incidental life gain. You have to remember that Gifted Aetherborn is still in the format. These are cards that will be synergistic together. So Argal's Bloodfast, something I like and I'm willing to explore in this format. And then when you flip it, they're all maze at this point. So if you'd rather pay the life and draw the cards, that is something that you can continue to do. But if you want to flip it into one half of Diamond Valley, that might be good as well. I'm going to say that's a little bit more situational. Now, if you're playing Steely effects, it's certainly great. But Argul's Bloodfast is something I'm definitely interested in doing in Standard.
Sean, I got to just say, you know, Diamond Valley is like $250. I hope you know that, by the way. No, I think they did an awesome job on these flip cards of taking your Diamond Valleys, Gaia's Cradles, all these awesome cards on the other side, not reprinting them, but giving you the spirit of those cards. And I think that's why all three of us just love these flip cards so much. This one, it reminds me a lot of Erebos. I think if we go into a format where you've got a black X control deck of some style, this is fine to get with, or like to, you know, go towards, especially since you have Approach of the Second Sun in the format. If you get like a black, like an Esper control deck that's doing well, I mean, this is a good card engine. The only issue with it is it literally does nothing when you play it. If it had like a second mode of some style on it where it was basically, you know, some novelty part on it, I think this is definitely the weakest one of them. But I think this is going to go into your, like I said, your Esper control decks, kind of like the Titans were back in the day where all of them are going to see their day.
I agree with both of you, Sean. I love your allusion to Diamond Valley because, as we all know, that was a very, very impactful card way back in the day in a much, much different game than Magic is now. And Hurley, I definitely agree with you as well. It seems like it would slot into control decks. I'm more interested in putting this in kind of a creature-heavy deck, more of like a white-black vampires. This is a high-risk, high-reward card. As long as you have the mana and some life available, go for it. Start, you know, trying to find that card that you need to take control of the game. Paying two life and drawing a card kind of sets your opponent on edge because that's always an option. And then to always be able to flip it at your leisure, I think is another big thing that your opponent has to worry about, because you can just start gaining that life back if you've got some big creatures, especially on your side of the table. So the high risk, high reward is what makes this, I think, a very, very interesting play. And even on a Mardu build in Modern, which you all know I've been very big on for a while now, I think this could be a role player there in some kind of a tokens deck.
Argal's Bloodfast, this week's 3 minutes to brew here on Try Hards. That brings us up to what we did to get better at Magic this week. Matt, what'd you do to get better at Magic?
Didn't play any Magic and watched a good amount. Most of it was laying on the couch and feeling like crap, which was my own doing. Been a great couple weeks since EW. I haven't played much Magic. Starting to get the itch back. And so with Lauren having to work this weekend, I'm looking forward to playing some more Magic. Definitely being able to watch some drafts on Pro Tour. I definitely want to do a draft at some point here coming up.
All right, Matt. You get some blue star ointment for that itch. It takes care of a long list of things. Brian, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
You know, one of the things that I found myself doing to get better at Magic this week, I think, was just kind of the continuation of Eternal Weekend. Having met some patrons from our cast at Eternal Weekend, definitely Dominic Monfrey, now friended him on Facebook, kind of following what he's doing with his kids. He's following what I'm doing with my kids on a regular basis. Kind of fun. The Leaving the Legacy guys and kind of responding to posts that they're leaving on their site and things. Just being connected more through the community on that social side. I just actually joined a group called Midwest Magic Tournaments, which actually is a fantastic resource for kind of checking out where all the tournaments are happening in the Midwest, and color me surprised at all of the different shops in the state of Iowa near me who are offering Magic tournaments and PPTQs from now through the end of January. I was a little taken aback, I have to admit. So there was that. So I feel like I've, you know, been connecting through the community that way. The other thing was I read this fantastic article on Channel Fireball by Andrei Strosky that was titled Call a Judge. And it was basically an article about we don't use judge calls enough in the game. And I think it was a very, very well-written article, very, very good point. He talks about a Twitter feed that he said was kicked off by Canadian Paul Dean who was talking about an interaction in Modern with like Eldrazi Tron, but basically is arguing that we don't call judges enough, and judge calls should not be made to, you know, ding your opponent. It should not be called only to kind of get your opponent. It should just be called because there's an issue and this is a complicated game. And I think we've talked about that on the show a number of times, but it's a really, really well-written article. So those of you out there interested, hit up Channel Fireball.
I didn't play any Magic this week, but I think I did something to get better at Magic. My buddy Sean Parker, I don't talk about him much on the show. He doesn't play a lot of Magic. Very busy guy down in St. Louis with his family. But he does run a online D&D game. So I got asked to guest star in this past week's episode, and I had so much fun doing it. Sean, thanks for inviting me. But what it drove home to me was when you're not emotionally involved in something, you can sort of disconnect and look at it dispassionately. And I think that's something that I need to do a little bit more with Magic, is to not be emotionally involved in the card choices, deck choices that I'm making, and look at things a little bit more dispassionately. And by having so much fun doing that, I think that's turned over a little different synergy in my mind about my ability to still enjoy what I'm going to do with Magic, but to start by looking at things a little bit more dispassionately and unemotionally before I get involved with them. So I'm hoping to carry some of that over into my future decisions with Magic. Hopefully you did something to get better at the game this week. Oh, you brave soul, hanging out with the Tryhards all episode long. We'll see you next week here on Tryhards.